I'm with Jenny Hayward-Jones and Mark Tamsett talking about the year in the Pacific Islands region. Jenny, let's start with Fiji, probably the most significant developments in the region have happened in Fiji this year, not just an election, but it seemed like a reset, if that's the right word, in Australia-Fiji relations and two big international visits as well.
Yes, well, certainly the elections were the most anticipated event in the Pacific in recent years. No elections, of course, since 2006 when Commodore Bainimarama took over in a coup. So certainly there was a lot of expectation that the elections would be free and fair. Australia, which had really put Fiji out in the cold after the coup, decided earlier this year to try and restore some strength and ballast to the relationship so they would have a chance of, restoring the relationship to a full diplomatic one after the elections. So Julie Bishop visited in February and reset the relationship on what I believe were good terms for Australia. That then dealt Australia back into the game. We were able to assist through the elections process itself, leverage other countries' assistance for it as well. And in the end, on the day, it was a very free and fair election on the day. There were some questions around the fairness in terms of what candidates were able to stand, but I think there was certainly a general acceptance by the international observers that the elections were free and fair on the day. Bainimarama, as expected, came out with a majority, and somewhat unexpectedly a majority in his own right. So he now has a renewed mandate and, of course, governs as the legitimate Prime Minister of Fiji.
I think it's important to bring up that it hasn't all been smooth sailing for democracy in Fiji since the elections. There are still a lot of questions around the freedom of the media, there's processes within the Fiji Parliament itself, and as well as police brutality has been brought up a lot. So it's not the end of the road by any means for the transition of democracy in Fiji.
And so what about the diplomatic picture, Mark? Two big visits after the G20, Xi Jinping and Prime Minister Modi of India.
Yes, this is certainly a huge win for Fiji, showing its importance as maybe a regional hub. I'm not convinced Fiji would have attracted both those visits if they hadn't been on the way back from the G20, but either way, the visits were a big success. The actual announcements coming out of the visits were not particularly large or game changers in the region, but still nonetheless a big win for Bainimarama and Fiji.
But in any case, Jenny, I think your argument for a long time has been that the influence of these newer powers, particularly China, has been overstated in our region, and that for Fiji, the Australia-Fiji relationship and the New Zealand-Fiji relationships are still key, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, China is certainly a bigger donor in Fiji than it has been in the past. It has increased its aid and increased its investment. But we need to put that in perspective. Australia is still far and away the biggest source of tourism for Fiji, which is, of course, the driver of its economy. Australia is still the biggest investor and the biggest donor, and the people-to-people relations between Australia and Fiji are still incredibly important and much more significant than, of course, between Fiji and China.
So let's turn to the other big country in the Pacific, PNG. Maybe I'll start with just a broad question about the state of democracy in PNG.
It's a really interesting question, Sam. I think while all the attention has been on the lack of democracy in Fiji over the last few years, what the regions would fail to note is, I think, the decline in democracy in Papua New Guinea. We've seen really since, before the last elections in 2012, when there was a constitutional crisis, an argument between former Prime Minister Somare and now Prime Minister Peter O'Neill about which of them was the legitimate Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea. We've seen then sort of respect for the constitution decline. Peter O'Neill now has a very significant majority post 2012 elections. I think there are only seven people at the moment in the opposition in Papua New Guinea. So he rules really, not as a dictator certainly, but certainly as a very powerful Prime Minister. And I think he's been able to get away with a lot of I guess, ignoring processes. Parliament hasn't sit as often as it should in Papua New Guinea. He's able to overrule his colleagues, his cabinet colleagues, in ways that previous prime ministers were not able to. So I think we are seeing a different kind of democracy emerge, a majoritarian democracy perhaps emerge in Papua New Guinea.
I think it's important to note that even though it appears Peter O'Neill at the moment is very stable in his position with what is an enviable majority in the House of Representatives, his grace period for challenges of no confidence motions runs out early next year. And it's very difficult to predict what will happen in PNG politics, but I don't think his position, we can say, is particularly stable at the moment, particularly with his referral to the leadership tribunal. He could well face criminal charges.
And on the economic front, PNG is increasingly regarded as being an important energy supplier. This year, Jenny and Mark, have you seen any indications that that growing clout is actually translating into better living conditions for the people of PNG?
Unfortunately not, and that seems to be such an intractable problem in Papua New Guinea that despite, I think it's now 14 years of successive growth, we still have yet to see any significant improvement in living standards. This is largely because there are significant capacity problems in delivering health and education services in such a diverse country where transport links are very poor, infrastructure is poor. Just standards of education also poor. So it's very difficult to see how Peter O'Neill's government can turn that around anytime soon, although, of course, they are focused on it. They've introduced free education, free health policies, but unfortunately have not been able to sort of find the requisite number of teachers or health workers to really make that work for the country. So it's Papua New Guinea is the only country that will not meet any of them. One of only three countries in the world that will not meet any of the Millennium Development Goals.
The other two are North Korea and Zimbabwe, just for a bit of context there.
So PNG is not in good company there. So this is the biggest problem PNG faces. Next year it's due to have the largest GDP growth of any country in the world by some margin. So I think it will probably be an even bigger test next year to prove whether they can translate this newfound status into any improvement.
That's astonishing. So the largest GDP growth of any country in the world and one of only three countries that's not going to make its Millennium Development Goals.
That's right. It's actually gone backwards on a number of indicators as well.
Wow.
Over the last few years.
It's a conundrum.
So just lastly, let's turn to the Solomons. The Solomon Islands had elections this year, the first post-Ramsey polls, with the return of a figure who is, well, can we say hostile to Australia?
Well, certainly the evidence is there that he's been hostile to Australia in the past. This will be Manasa Sogavare's third go-round as Prime Minister of Solomon Islands. Previous two occasions where he came to power in controversy in 2000 after a coup, in 2006 after riots removed the then-appointed Prime Minister. So this will be his first time to come to power, I guess, in fairly normal means. I think the situation, though, is somewhat different, though. We're in a post-Ramsey environment, so I think Sogavare's sort of noted distrust of outside powers may be different at this time. The Solomon's economy is in really dire straits, so he knows he needs to attract foreign investment, and to do that really needs to have a good relationship with the development partners of Solomon Islands. Primary of those, the biggest one of those, of course, is Australia. So I think things will be a little different this time, but I suspect there might be some difficult times ahead.
Mark, Jenny, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sam.